Want entertainment designed just for you? Then check out customizable streaming TV from Xfinity. It makes your life simple, easy, awesome.
Xfinity gives you customizable streaming TV options. Enjoy the most free shows anywhere on any device, and even access your streaming apps right on your TV with X1. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Warning. This show contains adult political themes and language. Liberals and little children should cover their ears.
Welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps, where negativity never sounded so good. Now here's your host, Thomas Purcell.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow the show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com. Be sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Tom and join us on Facebook at Real Liberty Never Sleeps on Facebook.com. Good morning. Day before the election, I'm kind of excited about what tomorrow brings because I really don't know what's coming. I really don't. It's a kind of a thing where you get a feel of things. But this election is going to be razor thin. I really do believe that. I don't know if the Republicans will retain the House or not. It's going to be close. It may come down to a few seats. I don't know if they'll retain the Senate. I know I made the prediction in January that the Republicans would keep the House but lose the Senate. And the numbers stack up the other way. I made that prediction because I felt that the country was going to become even more polarized. I was correct. And as a result, when the nation becomes polarized, people get motivated to vote. And when people get motivated to vote, generally the Republicans do well. And generally House seats go Republican. And when that happens, when you see a polarization, then states tend to get a little bit more flat in Senate races, which are state races and not local. That's why I felt that way. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I hope I'm wrong. I hope the Republicans win everything tomorrow. I hope that he retains the House and the Senate and he gets a mandate for 2 years. But you can't tell. If you went by the statistical numbers based on what previous midterms has brought, what the amount of seats that are up, where the seats are and whatnot, typically from the mathematical point of view, the Democrats will win. But there's been a shift in this country intellectually and politically, and I don't know if that will happen. I really don't. It's kind of like if the Republicans turn out to vote, if the conservatives get up off their duffs, which they don't in the midterms statistically. If they get up off their duffs, if they go to the polling places, if they turn in those ballots early, and indications are good, indications are that early ballots, because Republicans are smarter than Democrats, early ballots are going toward Republicans because smart people vote early or vote by mail-in ballot rather than, you know, and I'm not talking about actually mailing in. You could take your mail-in ballot and just drop it in a box and not wait on those lines. I mean, typically it's Democrats that are stupid enough to wait on lines and complain when there aren't enough ballot people or election workers and are sitting there at 8 o'clock at night waiting to vote. It's typically a Democrat that's doing that. And then they scream the next day, voter suppression, when in fact you've had months to vote. But that's a whole nother show. Today, you know, everyone was talking to me over the weekend and sending me messages and said, oh, what are you going to say about the elections? Are you going to try and motivate people? I've been motivating people, I mean, forever in this show. If you are a listener to this show and you don't know where I stand or what I support or why conservatism is better, why smaller government, lower taxes, and lower regulations benefits the common man better, if you don't know that by now, there isn't anything that I'm going to say today that's going to make a difference. And I'm not going to analyze it. You know, all the shows, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, they're all spending the last 2 days analyzing, oh, this could happen and this is why Trump is doing that. Like, that's all mental masturbation. We know that the polls are inaccurate. We know that most political analysts at this late date don't know what they're talking about. I was listening to Karl Rove. He didn't know what he's talking about. Marie Harf doesn't know what she's talking about. Just constantly giving a poor analysis of the situation. They don't, you know why? Because they live up in their ivory towers. They sit inside the Beltway and they pontificate about things they don't know. They never ran a business. They never got out and talked to people in the streets. They do polls. They call people on the phone or they send out mailers. And those people, the people that respond in that way, they are not the average person. The average person like me hangs up. And so the polls, I think, are wildly inaccurate, if only for that reason. And then, of course, where do they poll? They poll in the big cities, which are largely Democrat-based. And that's why when you read the fine print on these polls, it's always plus 9 Democrat, plus 8 Democrat. You see, they're unreliable, okay? And they really just, they don't know what the average person in the street is thinking. Guys like me, guys like who are out there talking to people every day, those are the people who know what's going on. The local precinct captains of each party, both Democrat and Republican, they know what's going on. They know what the people are saying and what they're feeling, what's important to them. What's important to the Democrats right now is health care. What's important to Republicans is immigration and the economy. And they're going to go head-to-head in this ballot box. And there isn't anything that I'm going to say today that's going to change that or be insightful into what's happening. So today I've decided to talk about cultural change, about what's coming, because I think that's more relevant to you insofar as political analysis. We've come a long way in this country. We've had multiple generations. We had the me generation of the 80s, which I'm a happy member of, the member of the capitalist club, the Reagan Revolution. That's my generation. Then there was Generation X, Generation Y, and now we've got the millennial generation, you know, and there's all these subsets in between. I want to talk about the millennial generation today, about the changes, the cultural changes that may be coming, and what isn't coming, what is coming, what has been said about the millennial generation that's correct, what is not correct, and so forth, because I think that is something that is relevant to you. It's not going to sway your vote in any way. You know, it's not going to be, you should vote because of this. I've said enough on that. If you don't know to vote Republican by now, you're not going to know to vote Republican right now, okay? If you're going to sit home and say, my candidate isn't Republican enough or conservative enough, and, you know, I don't think it's important to vote for them, I have to vote my conscience, well, then you're an idiot and you haven't been listening to my show, okay? I've told you why you should vote Republican. I've told you why you need to vote for smaller government. I've told you why you need to hold your nose and hold and vote for somebody that may not be conservative enough, because you vote for them, you keep it Republican, and then in the next primary, you look at who's out there. That's what you do, right? But we're going to talk about a number of elections today, a little bit, in regards to the millennial generation. Before we move on, I want to let you know, we're slow rolling out the updates to the show. I'm not doing it all at once. There's a couple reasons for it. I had a discussion with family over the weekend about it. I'm slow rolling out some updates. I've updated the Facebook, then I updated the Twitter, then I updated Patreon, you know, logos and stuff. And they're going to change, too, as I'm doing them. I'm adjusting them and kind of like rubbing out the so to speak, no pun intended, getting it all, everything perfect. Making slight adjustments to each setting, saying, oh, that doesn't quite look right or want, or having an idea as I'm building it. I'll be doing that over the next 4 to 6 weeks. I usually just went crazy at Christmas time and would work 18 hours a day doing all my updates. But I've decided this year I know what I want early, and I wanted a more bold look and that kind of thing, and a little bit more emphasis on certain things and de-emphasizing others and trying to make some changes and make it a little bit more eye candy-ish, so to speak. So you'll see those changes, and they'll be constantly changing too. You know, I'm going to make some additional changes to Facebook and Twitter and stuff. I think I'll keep the Patreon the way I've done it. I may change some of that in there. I'm not changing any of the bonuses or anything like that. That's still the same. I'm sorry I didn't get out some PDFs like I said I would. I promise I'll send them out to you, larger donors this week. A bunch of them. I feel bad about it, but it's been crazy the last few weeks. They've been tearing up my office here and repainting and doing all kinds of stuff. So, and I've been out every free moment too, working on the updates and, you know, getting a few new things for the office and whatnot. Because I am going to bring it to videotape the show back again. And it will probably happen late spring, early summer. I can't give you an exact date. You get the painter, you got the decorator, you got the flooring guy, and they're all talking to each other like, well, when are you doing this? When are you doing that? When can we get in? When can we do that? And then, of course, we've got to figure everything out. So those updates are going to be rolling out in the next 4 to 6 weeks. We'll be all done, of course, by new January. I'm going to roll out a new update to the show as far as the intro, what I say and that kind of thing, and de-emphasize some things and re-emphasize other things and all kinds of stuff coming. Just want to let you know, we're trying to keep this show current and relevant to the listening audience. And I think that's important to you. As a listener who is donating to the show, you need to know about this and you need to be included in that process. And that's why I say it's really important that you do these donations. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Without those donations, this show would not be around today. Without your support and the level of support that you're giving, that, you know, even those $2 donors, we got a bunch of them. That's good. It helps offset the costs of billing and things like that. And even though it's nothing to you, $2 or $3, it's a lot to me. Trust me when I tell you, it's a lot. So that's why I constantly emphasize even small donors need to donate to the show. And to the big donors of the show, I'm going to have a little special something for you in the mail at the end of the year in January. Usually I take two or three of the top donors, two of the three of the longest donors, and give them a little something, send them something in the mail, gift in the mail, and I haven't decided what it's going to be this year. Anyway, well, let's move on. We got a lot to talk about, and I want to talk about start demographics and the election tomorrow, because that's the most relevant. The Democrat Party has been emphasizing a get-out-the-vote thing, and I don't fault them for that. I think it's a good thing that to encourage people to register, to encourage people to vote. I do the same thing. I would never attack someone, you know, those. They often make these get out the vote videos, which are really leftist, but I never attack them. I never, at least not publicly, because I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think each political side makes their argument, encourages people to vote. I take issue, of course, with the Antifa and things like that, but not with people saying, hey, you need to get out and vote and you need to vote for my candidate. I would never attack a celebrity for saying that or anything. That's a good thing. That's the way I think politics needs to be done and emphasized. But the Democrats have been pushing this millennial vote, that if the millennials would just get out and vote and this and this and that, and I'm going to tell you, millennials don't vote. And let's get into that first. Let's take a break and let's talk about the millennial generation. We'll be right back. And we're back. Who votes Democrat? This is a question. It's an honest question. Who votes Republican and who votes Democrat? Well, generally, Republicans tend to be older, more financially well off. They tend to be whiter. They tend to be business owners. They tend to be a little bit more educated about politics than liberal, and that would surprise you. You would think that the average liberal would be more educated about politics. They're not. Most liberals that vote, when you look at the voting base, the millennial generation in particular, are badly educated about civics, about what the Constitution says, about pride in America and these sorts of things. That's generally a Republican vote. The millennial vote, largely, are people that are wired in, tuned out, misinformed, miseducated, and basically more in touch with their emotions rather than their intellect. They generally make their arguments based on emotion. But by and large, as a demographic, and I'm not talking about individuals. I'm not talking about, oh, but I'm a millennial and I vote, but I'm – don't go down that road. Don't go into the weeds. I'm talking about as a general demographic, percentage of voters. This is white, black, Hispanic, whatever, women. Millennials traditionally don't vote. They don't. They're more interested in their own lives than in voting. Now, this is not uncommon. This is not specific to that this generation that's coming out now. Generally, younger people don't vote. People under the age of 25, I'm talking about. Not somebody, when they get into their 30s, they tend to be a little bit more in tune with going out and voting. But by and large, young people don't vote. They're typically college students and whatnot at this age. And they tend to be more interested in themselves and don't pay attention to civics, don't pay attention to politics, and generally are misinformed. That's a general rule. But I was too. I have to say, this is not something that is specific to the millennial generation. It's specific to young people, and that's what you need to understand. There's a difference between being stupid because you're young and being stupid because you're in the millennial generation, right? It's a different kind of miseducated. People that are young are more interested in girls and or if you're gay, the same sex, and more interested in their self. They're more interested in their cars and their clothes and their college and their grades. You got a lot going on when you're young. I know I did. I would suspect, and I would understand that most millennials today are more interested in their self than ever before. And proof of that, and this is why I'm making the distinction, is that the younger generation today seems to be more interested in being famous than in being wealthy or being successful. They're more interested in public recognition and what the others think of them. And that's really the core problem with the millennial generation. It's not just, oh, young people today. You know, I didn't want to do a show where, oh, it's young people today, because then you become the old white man complaining about kids, right? It becomes, oh, look at him attacking the young people. Oh, he's out of touch and that kind of thing. No. I want to talk about this from a scientific point of view. Kids today tend to be more enthusiastic about their fame or their what other people think of them more than any other generation. Most people of my generation didn't give a rat's ass about what other people thought. They do, as young people generally do. But this generation is particularly in love with themselves as far as what other people think. It's always about what other people think. And I saw this trend when I became or went into insurance and financial planning. You would tell people about a financial product, young people, 20s. You know, I worked with a lot of young people who were new homeowners, that kind of thing, new parents. They started to become concerned about their finances and what the future would bring, and so they sat down with me. I would find that the younger they were, and as I've been doing it for, I think, 15, 16 years, when you talk to younger people, and it was summed up by a client once who said this, they're more interested in what other people think they spend their money on. When I would explain a great financial plan, you know, I'd say, lay it all out. This is where you put your money. This is how you do it. This is you do some insurance, some investments, blah, blah, blah. They would say to me, almost to a man, well, I don't know. It seems like it's a waste of money. And I go, well, how is it a waste of money? And they go, well, unless I die, I don't win, or unless no one will see this investment. Everyone sees the new house, the new car. They weren't interested in their value to themselves. And I go, but you understand this is a benefit to you in a lot of different ways. This will provide money for your children. This will provide money for your education. This will provide money for your retirement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is why you do this investment. This is why you put money in the market. This is why you do this. It was all about what other people thought. But I can't show it to other people. I can't show it off. Well, should I go, sure, why don't you put a picture on the wall? Yeah, for a copy of your policies, a copy of your investments. Why don't you put your IRA statement up on the wall? But, you know, didn't that joke would fall flat. It was all about what other people thought. This generation is more the YouTube generation. What do kids today do or talk about in college? A viral video. Anything from a funny cat to what an idiot does. This is why many of the millennial generation are doing the most idiotic things on YouTube. They burn their hands on the stoves. They eat Tide Pods. There's all kinds of different challenges on the internet. If you eat this, film it. If you do that, film it. Guys are falling off 50-story buildings because they're making these videos, oh, look at me standing on the edge of this building. In fact, it's all, and people are doing it and they're crowdfunding it. Oh, crowdfund me through, for instance, our own service that we use, Patreon, which is a great service, by the way. I know it's run by a bunch of young kids and the millennial generation and all the happy faces that you see all over, and they got all, that's how they're marketed. But I got to tell you, they do a great job, honest to God. And most of these YouTube videos will say, oh, fund me in my adventures. Fund me in doing this. Fund me in doing that. Everybody asks for funding. I'm making these films or these films about this. And it's always about, almost always, about themselves. watch me do this, watch her do this, watch so-and-so do this. And you know, one of the things that I posted an article to Facebook about was there were taking adult stars, pornos. I mean, they're pornos. And they're calling them now cam girls, where they do sexual acts on video and guys watch it on YouTube. This is a common thing now. And they're porno videos. And the attitude is, oh, well, this is safe because I'm not actually having sex. I'm just doing it. It's the same thing. It's an adult film worker, or I should say a whore. That's what you do. You pay the money for sexual acts. That's a whore. Doesn't matter if you have interaction or not. It's a debasement of oneself. It's a lowering of yourself in trying to be part of the collective. It essentially is communism, is collectivism. That when you talk about leftism and you talk about communism, what it is an elimination of the self, of the individual, and becoming part of the whole, being part of the collective, being part or selfless to the state, which is essentially the group of people. That's really what's at the heart of the millennial generations in love with leftism, with communism, with socialism, with many of the big government isms. It's a debasement of oneself. This is why you have these celebrities going out, riding on giant penises, wearing completely seductive clothing, and then lecturing America on what they should do and what they shouldn't do. It's classic communism. It's a debasement of oneself. And that's what communism, Nazism, what most big governments are all about. You are worthless. The fatherland is the most important. The motherland is the most important. The state is more important than what your needs are. The needs of the whole are more important than the needs of the few. And as a result, millennials don't vote, because they're constantly talking about themselves. Oh, everyone else needs to do something, and look at me doing something. I wish they would do something like millennials standing in line to vote. Oh, look at me doing that. But I guess that doesn't attract Patreon. You know, it doesn't attract crowdfunding sources to do that. What attracts crowdfunding is, oh, look at that guy do that. Look at that guy do something stupid. Look at that guy eat that thing. Do that dumb thing. And it seems like, I mean, I saw these videos of people. What are the videos? Well, they get out of the car on the passenger side and they do dumb things while the car rolls. What the hell is that? That's nothing more than a debasement of one's own self, a debasement of who they are. And I want to talk about that further, about being wired in. We'll be right back to this brief break. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page, or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. You know, it's funny, but when we talk about this generation, I don't want to talk about it in a negative term. In the sense that, oh, look at how stupid they are. Look at how it comes out as like that. And I don't want it to be. You have to understand why a next generation does what it does. Why does the millennial generation act in a certain fashion? Why are they so in love with socialism? Why are they so in love with communism? In my generation, the Reagan generation, we were more interested in capitalism, building something, and becoming wealthy. Now, that went to excess. The 80s generation was called the me generation, right? And we got into trouble with that. There were a number of movies. I remember the movie Wall Street being a particular interest. You know, the story of Gordon Gekko, Greed is Good, the guy with the slick back hair, the slick suit, buying and selling companies, Gordon Gekko types. We all know the stereotype, right? That was the me generation. But you have to understand that so that you understand where the country is going. In what way? In what way is the country growing? Is it a better way or is it a worse way? In what ways are there pitfalls? In what ways are there good things from the millennial generation? Same thing. You have to understand where it's going in order to either prevent it or direct it and channel it properly. That's the point. We have to understand this generation that's coming out and what America might look like 50 years or 100 years from now. In order to understand, well, how do you sell conservatism? How do you sell small government? How do you sell individualism to a generation that is entirely in love with themselves and debasing oneself? How do you do that? Well, social media plays a large role in it because why? Younger people tend to be wired in. Facebook is becoming now a thing for older people. 30-plus crowd. It didn't used to be that. Facebook used to be the younger generation. It was kind of a thing where younger people could talk about themselves on Facebook. It's now become a political tool, a tool of various factions and forms. And many people say it's the sign that Facebook has become dying out. Remember MySpace? I don't know if you, those of you who knew this, but MySpace was a huge thing at one time. Everybody had a MySpace account, pictures of their photos, pictures of themselves, whatnot. And then it fell out of favor when Facebook came along. Well, it's only a matter of time before something comes along that's more attractive to Facebook. And there have been a number of attempts to make a conservative Facebook or something like that. And people have always approached me saying, hey, why don't you come join us over here and over here? I said, you know what, I'm going to do that? When everyone starts talking about it and doing it, and when all the social media buttons, you know, when you build a website, what are the five big social media giants? When they become a giant, then I'll join it. I'm not going to waste my time because for me, social media is a tool. It's not something that I love doing. I do enjoy it in some respects. I love talking with my listeners. I love interacting with them. The millennial generation has a tendency to be more wired in. They're really big on YouTube, on videos, less on content or intellectual thought, which is kind of a problem. Because when you have an entire generation that is in love with the visual, in love with the physical rather than the mind, rather than the intellectual, there's a degeneration involved in that. Because the society moves forward when it becomes more intellectual, when it starts to think about things. Think of it in comparison to the Renaissance era of Europe. When Europe came out of the Dark Ages, it was largely because very learned men or the leaders of society began to delve into the intellectual arts. People like Da Vinci, people like Michelangelo, people like others who began to express themselves through art, yes, but also through the pursuit of intellectualism. Why are we here? What has become of us? What does the universe, where is our place in the universe, both physically, scientifically, and intellectually? This was a major expansion of intellectualism, which led to the Great Renaissance, led to the Restoration, led to many of the great things of culture of Europe. Take a look at Europe. And many people will say, oh, I love going to Europe. Well, why? I love living and looking at all the great things that were done in Europe. You know, the Sistine Chapel, all the great buildings and the art. And I always say, well, you understand that that is going into a museum. You're tuning yourself out. When you become so in love with what happened in the 1700s and 1800s, all these great buildings and culture. I want to live in a building from the 1930s or the 1830s or something like that. You're failing your own generation because you're not building the cities of tomorrow. You're living in the cities of yesterday. And as such, you're living in the intellectual minds of the people of the 17th and 18th century. You're forgetting, hey, what about today? Take a look at the cultures and the cities of the Middle East, which have been largely built since the 1950s. You're looking at Abu Dhabi, Dubai, things like that. Fantastic cities of tomorrow. The kind of thing that you would see in the Jetsons. That's going to be a culture. That's going to be something that future generations say, oh, look at the beautiful cities that were built in 2020, 2030, 2040. That stopped in Europe. Their culture is arrested in Europe. And why? Well, because they went into the path of socialism, communism, and big government. And as a result, society began to stop. They stopped growing 1850 or so. When the wars happened, when there was major stagnation, when it became about government, when it became less about the individual, as it was in the 1500s and the 1600s, which was more focused on strong individuals. Today, it's nothing like that. It's more focused on states. And as a result, their society, their culture has completely stagnant. When you talk about a German building or a French building or something from 1970 forward, what do you think of? I think of Citroën cars and things like that, things that you wouldn't want to have anything to do with. When I think about the greatness of France and the greatness of Germany and the greatness of England, I think about the 1700s and 1800s. They were moving forward in that time. Remember, the sun didn't set on the British Empire. What were they doing? They were colonizing countries around the world. They were expanding their power. Victorian England was pretty much the death of England. And people talk about countries being no longer great. England, France, Germany, they're no longer great because they fell into the trap of statism. Now look at America. America became a great nation in the 50s. And why did we become that? Because of capitalism, individualism, and the expansion of intellectual pursuits. That's why America is really great, fundamentally. It's become stagnant. What has America done since 2000? What great buildings? What great works of art? What expansion? What did we invent? The iPod? Cell phone technology? We're tuning ourselves out. The intent of becoming wired in, of the expansion of the internet, of the telecommunications age, of the age of information, and all the stuff that's happened in America since 1950, which was everyone is greatly appreciative of, don't get me wrong, has turned a generation into a bunch of people on YouTube blowing themselves up or eating odd things. We're tuning ourselves out instead of in. And culture, as America has gone down the path of socialism and leftism and other isms, which the millennial generation is so in love with, as I said earlier, it's become stagnant. America has become stagnant as a culture, as a society. And they talk about all the technological revolutions that America has been doing in the last age of robotics is now we're on the dawn of and whatnot. As a society, culturally, we've had two successive generations now that is completely tuned out and not doing anything great. We're not accomplishing anything great in society anymore. We're no longer building great buildings. We're no longer doing great things. Those things are now happening, great things, great cities, Middle East and China. That's the culture of tomorrow. And it's worrisome because the human rights records in these countries is abominable. You know, everyone was complaining about the Khashoggi murder, about the fact that he was hacked to death or chopped up in a consulate. And I always say, well, what did you expect? The Saudi Arabian culture, their government, is completely insensitive to human rights. Same with China. They're going around committing genocide. How are we going to do business with a country like that? How companies, which are supposed to be about freedom of speech, companies like Facebook, companies like Google, the builders of the telecommunications age, which was designed so that people could communicate better with each other, is now doing business in China and Middle East, which are culturally backward, at least insofar as freedom of speech. So the millennial generation is more wired in than ever before, but it's more tuned out. They don't realize that being in love with oneself while being wired in is not becoming more in touch with your feelings or more in touch with your fellow man. It's becoming more isolated. We're beginning to become little castles where we have everything shipped in. Amazon, Uber Eats, where you have everything shipped in. You can have a couple of Whoppers delivered from Burger King in a few minutes. We don't want to go out of our homes. We want to be living in our little cocoons. We all want to have our little safe spaces, right? And I admit, I'm one of the worst offenders on some of that stuff. I love having stuff shipped by Amazon. I love having the fact that I don't have to go out and deal with people. But for me, it's a different reason. I just don't like, you know, the general public. With the millennial generation, it's all about what? Themselves. What other people think of me. That's the thing that is the most disturbing. Because I come from a generation where I didn't care about what other people thought. I come from a generation where you did what you wanted and that was something to be valued. Not caring about what the neighbor thinks of you. Not caring about what the guy down the street is doing. Care about what? What is it that what my generation and generations around mine, the generation before me and the generation after, what is it that we don't care about what other people's feelings are, right? Look at the movies, look at the art and whatnot, Blazing Saddles, for instance. This is complete, we don't care about anyone. Your feelings don't matter. And this generation is the complete opposite of that. We all have to have our safe spaces. We all have to be insulated. We can't offend anybody. And in doing so, we're destroying individual rights. That's the funny thing. They constantly talk about freedoms. Well, vote for Democrat. Why? Because then you're voting for what women's freedom are. But women are more enslaved by the Democratic narrative than the Republican narrative, and they don't even realize it. You're more enslaved. When the government decides what your rights are, when the government decides and pays for things like your birth control, your Planned Parenthood, whatnot, that becomes an enslavement. It doesn't become an freedom. And the millennial generation doesn't get that. They don't understand it. They don't understand that making government your master and your leader or your guide in life instead of individualism, spiritualism, such as religion, you're enslaving yourselves. You're tuned out. You're not tuned in. All this wiring in, connecting yourself to the internet. You know, there's an entire culture of the millennial generation that is now actually implanting themselves with electronic devices, and they think it's freeing them. They all talk about, well, we all have to have cell phones. We all have to have smartphones. Everybody's got a smartphone, everyone except me. It seems that way. And I try to explain to them, you're in love with a technology that's enslaving you. You're not tuned in at all. You're tuned out. You're a slave to your technology. You know, I was talking about this with a family member this weekend. How many times you go into a supermarket and somebody's got a cell phone glued to their head? And they're not talking about anything important. They're just rambling on about, you know, all kinds of Mickey Mouse crap, gossip. How many times do you see people walking across the sidewalks with their cell phone glued to their head? Walking in traffic, cell phone glued to their head. Walking down the street, cell phone glued to their head. Guys in their cars drifting into traffic and crossing into head-on collisions while they're texting. They actually are making laws. You can't text while you drive, which is going to make things worse. They're tuned out. They're completely missing the world around them. They're not interacting with anyone else. They're not interacting with society. They're interacting with themselves. They're allowing themselves to be monitored by government. We have video cameras on every corner now. It's 1984. It happened. Orwell's 1984 is now. People don't realize it. How many times has a crime been committed and they say, well, we got to check all the cameras in the area? And people think that's such a great idea. Well, now we can catch those offenders. Those offenders, child molesters, rapists, whatever, they were caught before we had cameras. I remember, believe it or not, people got put in jail before we had cameras on every street corner. But now your freedoms are taken away. You don't have the freedom to do and travel wherever you want. You're constantly bombarded with those that are people who are putting those cameras up with ads, with advertising, with government controls, with government saying, oh, now we can study where you move and what you're doing, and therefore we can craft laws and taxes to do so, to benefit from that, to benefit the state. You gave up your freedoms, you assholes. And then they're constantly telling me that they're more free than ever. Oh, we could do whatever we want. We could go wherever we want. Well, we have all this technology. You understand that technology is an enslaving force. People don't get it. Government says, we're going to monitor you. We're capable of telling where you are, whenever you are, what you're doing, because you have a cell phone in your body, even if it's turned off. And you signed up for that? You decided, oh, that's a good idea? Are you out of your minds? Are you insane? That's the generation today, wired in and tuned out. And worse, they're misinformed and miseducated about everything. We'll be back. We're back. Boy, am I running long today on my schedule. It's something I feel strongly about. We're losing our country with this generation. It's not just, oh, they're not as strong as the next generation. Every successive generation is a little bit weaker than the previous generation. That's the course of history in society, right? My generation isn't nearly as great as the greatest generation, the ones that went to war with Nazis. The ones that said, we're going to put aside our own lives for a time because the Nazi menace is a threat to us and the way we're living in our country and people in general. And so we're going to give up our lives, our money, and our treasure and do the right thing, even though we didn't have to. Well, World War II was brought on us because of Pearl Harbor, but the United States was gearing itself up to a war even before Pearl Harbor, and the Japanese knew it. Because we were cutting off their oil. That's why Japan attacked us, by the way. Because we were beginning to interfere in worldwide affairs for the first time. The education of kids today is more extensive than it's ever been. We had the Department of Education since 1975. It has been funding and expanding the role of government in our education. What has happened to education in this country? Are kids more informed today? Oh, they know more about celebrity stuff, pop culture, music, that kind of thing. But they know less and less about true individual rights, about understanding whatever issues are facing this country and themselves, more than ever before. And worse, our education system is training them to be more obedient. That's the thing that bothers me the most. The millennial generation, believe it or not, is more obedient to authority than ever before. And people will say to me, what are you talking about? Kids today don't do anything the parents tell them. No. I'm not talking about that. They can't do anything unless they've been programmed to. They can't think. They are unable to reach conclusions about things based on evidence. They only can do stuff they've been specifically told how to do. They can't think for themselves. Ask them to fold a pizza box. I don't know how to do that. Really? You can't figure it out? No. Can you show me how? They can't do anything on their own. They can't think for themselves. And that's worrisome. And because the reason is because they've been so wired in. They have to be shown everything. And as a result, because education, government has infiltrated itself so deeply and embedded itself in education. They're now subject easily to brainwashing, which is what modern education, especially at the higher levels, has become. They no longer talk about, well, these are the different concepts in which economics is built. No, they don't teach that. They say this is the way economics should work. That's a very different school of thought. That's not teaching the students to think. That's presenting information and saying this is what it is. That's a horrible way to educate someone. Instead of providing the different systems to, for instance, in economics, I'm just one example, and saying this system does this, this is the benefits, this is the negatives, this is what provides individual liberties, this is what provides statism and whatnot. They're not saying that. It's saying, well, capitalism is wrong, socialism is good, communism is good, and therefore You decide for yourselves. And that's a horrible way to teach people. And it comes from the fact that most professors have no experience on doing anything. When you look at any subject, I had this discussion. I saw this trend when I was going to school myself. I was in a classroom, a graduate level, and we were discussing the concept of different types of poetry. And I don't want to get into specific theories of hermeneutics and whatnot. I don't want to give a lecture today on English. But we were discussing the particular poem, Tiger, Tiger. And I don't know if you've ever read this before. It's Robert Blake. We're talking about, and the poem, basically, or the, I should say the lyric, is about a tiger and how beautiful it is and whatnot. And the professor was going into all kinds of things of what the poet was doing and what he wasn't doing. I said, this is a waste of time. Raise my hand, it's a waste of time. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, for instance, I said, you know, you're dissecting this poem line by line, lyric by lyric, and you're missing the intent of the poem. You're missing the intent of what Robert Blake was trying to tell us. And he goes, what do you mean? I go, well, let me give you an example. You could take a cat or a dog or any animal, a pig or whatever, and you can take that animal and you can kill it and you can dissect it and learn everything there is to know about a cat or a dog, right? Am I right? Well, yeah. I said, yeah, you learn the heart, the muscles, the sinew. But in the end, what you have is a dead cat. You don't really know how to think. You haven't really learned anything about the cat, the beauty of the cat, the beauty of its movement, the beauty of a dog or a pig or what it has to offer. You've learned nothing about a cat. And you've learned not to appreciate the animal for what it was. And that's what that poem is about. It's about taking time to appreciate not the muscle and sinew or understand what a cat is, but to appreciate the beauty of the cat. And that's what you're missing out when you dissect a poem like that. It was a change. I had seen this change in professors and classrooms for a number of years, but it had gotten to the point when I was at that point in my education. This was right at the turn of 1989 or so. I saw that shift gradually come over education in general. Economics was the same thing. They would study all kinds of details and tear it apart to pieces, but they wouldn't teach the student about why socialism was insignificant insofar as human history is concerned, why communism was a danger and a threat. They didn't teach that. They taught about how socialism was this great concept of communism because everyone shares and everyone benefits and there's no rich people. They didn't teach about the negatives. They didn't teach about what happens with human nature. They didn't teach the student to think for themselves about what was actually being taught. And that was, I realized the danger we were all in. I tried to say this in a number of newspaper articles at the time. Nobody listened. I said, you're in danger. Your education is in. Ronald Reagan told us that. When he was leaving office, he warned us. He said, you know what I'm concerned about? We did a lot of great things in the last 8 years. We've set America on the correct path. But here's something that you all should be worried about. And he talked about our failures to understand our own culture and why it was great. He talked about the failures of our education system in regards to patriotism, in regards to our Constitution, in regards to civic pride, that we aren't teaching it, that our government is no different than any other government. And that was worrisome to him, and I knew it too, and I knew what was going on in education. Education has been a complete failure. Not because they're not teaching, not because of unions, not because of any one reason or whatnot, not because they don't teach, they have no standards anymore. I've talked about the standard. For one reason and one reason alone, they don't understand what it is that makes America unique and don't teach students to think anymore. They're entirely misinformed and miseducated with this generation. It's one thing to say your education is failing because you're not teaching science, you're not teaching math. Okay, yeah. But that's, you could point that to every education system. The real failure is that we're not teaching children to think for themselves, not being individuals. You know, talk about individual. Oh, it's important to be individuals. Really? Oh, we you know, I got my tattoos and I got my blue hair and I got all this shit put in my face and that's why I'm an individual. That's not why you're an individual. You're becoming more of the collective that way. Don't you understand that? Individualism, true individualism, comes from the way you think and of dissent and of thinking differently from the crowd and understanding that you're important because you think differently, not because you look differently. Because you look differently, that's been since the dawn of time. I could wear, change my tie and look differently. That's not the issue. That's not making a statement. That's not expressing your individuality, wearing purple hair or blue teeth or whatever you do. You're just becoming part of the crowd. You're just becoming one of those guys who puts blue shit in their hair. Instead, what is it that you are as an individual? Why don't you think differently? Why don't you put down the cell phone for a minute? Why don't you stop playing the video games and turning your brains to mush and start thinking for yourselves? That's what I would say to every millennial that comes along. And then one last thought on this before we close out the show. I want to talk about discipline and giving a trophy to everyone because this is part of the problem and it's really at the core of the issue we're talking about today with the millennial generation. We'll be right back. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at Patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to LibertyNeverSleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. We're back. We only have a few minutes. When you talk about individuality, about thinking for yourself, it means synthesizing an opinion based on information. Not because of what you feel, not because of what you heard on the internet. You know, whenever you say something on Facebook or social media, Twitter, well, give me your sources. That's someone writing an article somewhere, a link to something or a Wikipedia or I don't know, any one of a dozen information sources that are out. That to me is meaningless. That doesn't mean anything. Your thoughts are just as important as some guy living in Washington, D.C. writing from an office in the New York Times. Your ideas are just as important. Why is it that you think that way? Why is it that you have, what sources do you have? Me, my mind. I am unique. My thoughts, my thinking, based on my education and experience. Because I've read all of these different books. I've learned all of these things. I have synthesized my own unique thought. I don't need a source. I believe this because why? I thought it up. That is lost with the millennial generation. They can't concept because they're so tuned in. They don't understand that's how you express your individuality. I am unique. I am a person because I think and I reason. Not because some guy on the internet wrote something and here's the link to this. You know, you do that to prove your argument, right? But it really is not relevant. It isn't. It's because I think this way that makes it important. Really? Okay, well, I think this. Okay, that's fine. We can discuss it. But providing sources, I used to get burned when you'd have to write papers, right, in college, and you'd have to provide a footnote, a source for everything that you say. Why? My thoughts don't count? My thoughts are somehow less important than some fuckhead living in Washington, D.C.? I know less about politics than Karl Rove. Why? Because Karl Rove's fat and sits on TV with a whiteboard? Because he's reached a level of popularity? Because he's chummy with people at Fox News? Screw him. My thoughts, your thoughts, are just as important as anyone on at Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Your opinions count because you are an individual and you think differently. And part of the problem is that we've become in love with the idea that everyone should win, that everyone's right, everyone gets a trophy. And when everyone gets a trophy and things don't turn out so well, because that's the way life is, life ain't fair. Despite what you've been told as a kid, life ain't fair. You may even lose when you have better talent. You may lose when you're even if you're the fastest or the smartest or the strongest. Learning how to lose is just as important, if not more important, than learning how to win. And if nobody loses and nobody learns how to lose, then you have what happened in the Clinton election, the Clinton-Trump election. Clinton lost. Deal with it. 55 million votes, but 55 million people voted for Hillary Clinton. That's not how we elect presidents. Learn something about civics. Learn to reason rather than what you feel. I feel that America should vote by popular vote. Because why? Because hell, my candidate lost. There's some conservative voices coming to a college campus. I can't deal with it. They shouldn't talk. Just don't listen. What's so hard about that? Why can't you have your own individual thoughts? See, this is all comes down to individualism, being part of the collective. The collective is insulted. The state is insulted. So therefore, they shouldn't speak. That's where it all comes from, folks. This is why leftism is such a big sell with the millennial generation. This is why they're always talking about it. This is why they're all in love with that. My feelings count. Sure they do. Everyone's does. So what? Deal with it. I need a safe space. No, life ain't a safe space. What's going to happen when this generation faces real adversity? War. Real war. Famine. Plague. That kind of thing. What's going to happen when they face that? The American people, the electorate, the younger generation below 30, have never faced any real adversity, despite what you're being told. Never. Nothing tough has ever come along to the millennial generation. Not a damn thing. They've had everything handed to them. And that's what they expect from government. Government should pay for my health care. Health insurance, pre-existing conditions. No, that's too bad. Life's tough. Deal with it. Everyone's looking for a handout. That's largely what the Democrat voter wants, a handout. I want a pre-existing condition. I should be able to buy insurance no matter how sick I am. Well, then it's not insurance, is it? It isn't. It's not a transfer of risk at all. If everyone has to pay for this, everyone else's health care. I'm my brother's keeper. No, you're not. No, you're not. They can't deal with that. And when everyone wins, everyone loses. When everyone gets a trophy, then the trophy is meaningless. It's a concept that Ayn Rand talked about often. She talked about elevation of mediocrity. We had the Olympics for many years, 2,000 years, Olympics. We champion the greatest athlete. Now we have the Special Olympics too, and I guess that's okay. But now everyone's getting a trophy, right? Doesn't matter if you're slow or weak or unable to do something. Everybody's able to get a trophy. Whee! Everybody gets a gold medal. Whee! My gold medal's just as good as your gold medal. Doesn't mean anything anymore. I see that culture online quite a bit in gaming, too. Video games have changed. When you play video games now, you can't lose. There's no losers in video games. All the kids love them. They're all about point and shoot. Point and shoot. Just kill. Turning kids into rabid, dehumanizing their fellow man. That's why you're seeing more school shootings. Because everyone wins online. And when they don't win in the classroom, when other people say, you look stupid with that purple hair and make fun of them, they can't deal with it. They can't say, well, I don't care what you think. I like my purple hair. I like my blue hair. Because I'm thinking as an individual. See, that's what the problem is, as I pointed out. They don't think as an individual. They just put faces on to make themselves individual, but they're the same as everybody else. That's why the criticism hurts so badly. It didn't as when I was a kid. Oh, sure, criticism hurts. It always does when you're a kid. And that's part of growing up. Part of growing up, and one of the things about being an adult is you learn not to give a shit about what other people say. You don't care what your neighbor, I like this. I like doing this. That's a big part of growing up. You know, they talk about being in touch with your feelings. I'm in touch with my feelings. I don't give a shit what anybody says. I like this music. I like this picture. I like this art. I like this paint on my house. I like what I do. I don't care what other people think. And it kind of stemmed out of the 80s generation, my generation, when I remember it was a big thing when I was a kid. When I was growing up, mid-30s, I should say. When people would discuss how much you're earning. How much you're making, $50,000, $60,000, whatever it was. Well, that's how adults keep score. No, that's how infants keep score. You can be successful making $2 a month. If you do what you love, if you do something that makes you better as a person, in your opinion, not anyone else's. I don't care what anyone thinks. I know what I like. I know what I want. I know what I'm going to do. That is when you become more powerful as an individual. That's what empowers you. True individuality is thinking differently. And thinking differently means everyone must lose at some point in their life and learn to deal with it. Oh, well, I lost this time. I'll get you next time. I'm willing to lose 100 times. If I can win once, that's what I'm going to do. That's how you get better at something, when you lose at something. You don't learn when you win. You learn when you lose. Well, I should do things differently. I should do that. No, but now they just change the rules of the game so that everybody wins. You don't learn a thing. You become a misinformed, miseducated adult who's willing to do whatever the guys in charge say. It's like Amazon workers. Oh, this is terrible. Working conditions are terrible. We want more money and this and this and that. Why don't you just quit? Why don't you do something else? You know, if everybody just walked out one day on Amazon and just said, I'm not going to deal with these working conditions, then it wouldn't be a business, would it? Businesses would change. But they don't. Millennial generation. Well, it's largely millennial generation working in those basically labor-intensive jobs. And they don't want to deal with it. They don't. You know, you can't get good service today. I had that experience this weekend myself. You know why? Oh, but this is just what I'm doing until I do what I'm going to do. Really? I don't care about my quality of my work now because I'm working toward this. I'm waiting tables now because I'm going to do this. No, 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 no. That makes you part of the crowd. That makes you a part of the problem. What you do is you be the best person you can be, whatever you're doing right now. And the millennial generation doesn't get that. And maybe that's part of being young, I suppose, but it's a worse problem now than it's ever been. Because why? Because everyone wins. No one loses. It's okay to be lousy at my job. Sure, it's okay. Why not? Everyone else is lousy. Sure, everyone wins, right? We can't chew somebody out for being lousy. We can't fire anyone because they'll sue. And that's where we are in America, and that's where we're going, unless we change direction with our education and with our vote. And that's part of why voting Republican is so important. We're going to cram it down this generation's throat, whether they like it or not, that sometimes you lose, and then you better learn to deal with it. And that's part of being an adult. That's part of being a functional, individual thinking, liberty-minded adult in a modern society. Learning to lose and learning that you won't always get your own way, but maybe next time you will. And that's why the ballot box is so important. That's why you need to stop picking up rocks and throwing through Starbucks windows. That's a failure. That's a temper tantrum. A generational one. And how do you deal with a child with a temper tantrum? My generation, we got out the belt. Dad got out the belt. Oh, you want to have something to cry about? I'll give you something to cry about. We don't do that anymore, do we? We don't. And the temper tantrum goes on year after year, month after month, generation after generation, until finally somebody comes in from the outside and just burns your country to the ground. That's what's coming, folks. Mark my words, it's what happened to the Roman Empire, it's what happened to the Egyptian Empire, it's what happened to every culture from the dawn of man forward as it grew as it changed, as it moved forward. It became less and less an adult thinking generation. And what and as a result, it was destroyed eventually. They talk about destruction from within. That's where it comes from. We're out of time today. Go vote. Take a few of your friends. If every Republican went and took three or four friends, we would win the election instantly. Be a landslide in the red. Because I firmly believe that the average person is fairly conservative. So go grab some friends. I told you this during the Trump election. I'll tell you again. Go grab a few friends today if they haven't voted. Have you voted? Let's go vote. I'll take you in my car. Come on. Go do that. It's really important. It's always important. They always say every election is, this is the most important election. Yeah, well, whatever. Every election is important. Go vote. All right? This election is no more important than the next one or the next one after that. They'll be talking about the 2020. Got to elect, re-elect Trump. We got too much on the table. Boom, boom, boom. They tell you that every time. Oh, this election is the most important. Every election is important. Go vote. Take care, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. And then we'll talk about what happens tomorrow on Wednesday's show. Tomorrow will be an election show. We'll be right. We'll be back on election day. Take care, folks. Have a good one.
Want entertainment designed just for you? Then check out customizable streaming TV from Xfinity. It makes your life simple, easy, awesome.
Xfinity gives you customizable streaming TV options. Enjoy the most free shows anywhere on any device, and even access your streaming apps right on your TV with X1. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.